Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We're coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
59-yard attempt for the win. Weeks with the snap. Tommy Townsend with the hold. And Kaimi Fairbairn with a chance to give the Texans the victory. Here's the snap by Weeks. The spot. Here's the kick by Fairbairn. Has the distance, and it's good! Fairbairn wins it at the buzzer! The Texans beat the Bills! 59 yards for the dub on H-Town Day, 23-20.
Mark Vandermeer on a fantastic call there for a fantastic ending of a really intense football game yesterday over at NRG Stadium as we welcome you in on a victorious Reaction Monday here on Sports Radio 610. 23-20 the final score. The Texans beat the Bills yesterday in yet another one of those Texan games that felt like early on it could have been the Texans putting the foot on the throat. The Bills are a very good football team. They are a very good football team that the Texans, especially defensively, forced into looking very, very bad at times yesterday. And this, Seth Payne, in my opinion, the biggest, certainly the biggest regular season win of the DeMeco Ryans era for me yesterday.
Yeah.
I know the Colts win got them into the postseason last year. I think with the way, I thought Clint Sterner made a great case for it yesterday on the postgame show. With the way that expectations are for this year as opposed to last year.
Yeah.
And the fact that the Bills, regardless of how they looked yesterday, and Josh Allen, regardless of how they looked yesterday, the Texans had a lot to do with it. That is an MVP candidate on what's been one of the best teams in the AFC over the last 5 years. That is a huge, huge win, and to me, the signature regular season win for the Texans.
I disagree with you guys on the significance or the bigness of the win, but I don't want to debate all that. I mean, remember the Browns were one of the best defenses they were horrible in the regular season, but the Colts game was just so big for so many reasons. Yeah. As far as yesterday. At the end of the day, you go through these games and these Texans games, it always feels like sometimes it feels really good at the beginning and then it feels like misery for about two or three quarters. And then it feels good at the end when they win, or at least you feel relief. Yesterday it felt awful right at the very beginning because offensively they did all those things that you didn't want to see. We're going to go short and we're going to run and we're going to get snuffed out. And then all of a sudden it all took off. The difference about yesterday, I think partly is just that it's the Bills that you expect it to be close. A lot of people, before the Ravens game, a lot of people thought there was no chance in hell the Texans were going to beat the Bills. But they made them look every bit like the worst version of Josh Allen that there is. It looked like Trevor Lawrence out there. Mm-hmm. And Josh Allen doesn't have chemistry with those receivers. He didn't have Khalil Shakir. And yet there are lots of quarterbacks out there who don't have Khalil Shakir chemistry with their receivers, who throw more for more than 130 yards. That was really, really nice by the defense. And then offensively, I think CJ, I was glad to see him have a game where he almost single-handedly took them out of the game at the end and then brought them back. Mm-hmm. Like, 'cause all very, very good quarterbacks in the NFL have those moments.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been really interesting. If they had gone on to lose that game, I mean, that would be the first time that I would be coming in here, if they had gone on to lose that game, saying that C.J. Stroud was a primary reason that they lost the game.
Well, the other time,
he's always been, when they lose, he's always been a contributor, because everybody contributes to a loss or a win. But that was jarring to see, and I don't expect it to be a trend. One thing I'll tell you what I'm not going to do today is come in and say, am I worried? Are you worried about C.J. Stroud?
Right.
I think it's a back quarter for a good player, but interception, fumble, intentional grounding in three straight possessions at the end of the game.
The one thing that I thought of was last year when he threw the interception versus the Bengals, and then they came back and they had some help from the Bengals with that, but on the drop touchdown that would have put it out of
Tyler
the way.
Tyler Boyd, yeah.
Yeah, but CJ came back and they won the game even after he'd thrown that interception. It was very similar to last year's Bengals game, where a lot of people were wondering last year, why were you throwing in that situation? Yeah. Yesterday, especially when he got that intentional grounding, I don't know why you're throwing there. Not with Kaimi Fairbairn as your kicker.
Yeah, you don't need to get much closer.
No, I mean, I guess if you really want to put it away and be aggressive there, and then CJ thought he was making the right decision, didn't think it was going to be as close a call as it was. But it was, I didn't have a problem with the call. But then he comes back and he rectifies it.
Well, he rectified, and the big thing was he got an opportunity to rectify it. And that was because of Sean McDermott, the head coach of the Bills. Like the Texans, I don't want to minimize the role of special teams in this. People are going to remember the Kyme Fairbairn field goal to win the game, as they should. 59 yards out. We had Kyme on the postgame show. He was excellent. We'll have some of that for you as we roll on with the show. What I really like, D'Amico loves to talk about complimentary football. All coaches do. And I thought the fact that CJ had such a rough fourth quarter that Tommy Townsend, with under a minute to go, punts the ball back after the intentional grounding, punts the ball back to the Bills, puts it down on the three, which was big because now the Bills, they were going to be aggressive and try to go for the win and go get a field goal. It's really hard to operate that far back. And you could tell from Josh Allen, it was really hard to operate. So Tommy Townsend pins them back there. For whatever reason, the Bills decided to throw the ball three times, so the Texans didn't have to empty any of their timeouts. They walked off the field still with two timeouts left in that game. They had all three timeouts left when they got the ball back. Robert Woods' punt return was huge. That was 13 yards you picked up, and he did it like a vet, man. Got it and immediately went north-south. No jimmy-jacking around there, no running, trying to get to the corner. Straight up field, gets it to the 46-yard line of the Buffalo Bills. CJ and Daria Gumbawale connect on a perfect little 5-yard, just little flick play. Yeah. They burn their time out, and then Kyme kicks a field goal. I thought the complimentary nature of special teams in that last minute with Townsend with the punt, Woods with the return, Fairbairn with the field goal was really, really cool to see.
And they also,
the ultimate Frank Ross sequence.
Defensively, on that final three and out by the Bills, they had great rush off the edge.
Yes.
And that was one thing yesterday where I was conflicted about. And at the end of the day, they put a lot of pressure on Josh Allen. He completed one pass on third down when he was under pressure. It was like 16 times he was under pressure in general.
He was one for 14 for 24 yards when pressured.
When pressured, that's what it was. And not just on third down, but on. So that's a combination of coverage and getting a rush. And a lot of the good rushes, Josh Allen was getting outside the pocket. That's one thing I keep thinking of D'Amico Autry when he comes back. Sometimes when the ends flush the quarterback and the defensive tackles are supposed to come around and contain on the fly, you got to improv it. D'Amico Autry's just got a different level of athleticism as those guys. So some of that might get cleaned up. Part of it is just Josh Allen being Josh Allen.
Yeah. Did you realize Josh Allen was having as bad a day statistically as he was while we were watching the game?
I did.
9 for 30.
Yeah, at one point he was 1 for 9 and CJ was 9 for 9, I think.
I remember that. Yeah. I remember that. But then I'm like, okay, well, he's not going to be 1 for 9 the whole, like, he's going to have some stretches here. I just didn't realize it was that bad.
I knew it was still in the second quarter, I think, wasn't it, when he tried to throw back across his body. And
it was at the end of the second quarter.
He had a wide open Cooks there, and it just fell, or Collins,
Hollins. He hit Al Shire right in the hands on the one I'm thinking of.
Okay, no, I was thinking of a different one, but no, the one that just wasn't incomplete. Yeah.
He was throwing, he was running to his left, and he tried to Mahomes it.
But then, and then Al Shire having two straight interceptions dropped.
That's the one I was thinking
of. Al Shire, I was nervous as hell with Al Shire right from the get-go because he missed that tackle bad early
in the game,
and he didn't quite look right. And we knew he had an illness, and
it turns out.
Yeah, and he ended up, okay, was that true? Okay.
I saw it reported.
Oh, you saw it reported?
It was on the internet.
People were telling me online, and I was like, can you send me the link? And they're like, I don't know, man. I saw it on Instagram. And so I didn't know for sure.
Yeah, I think Aaron Wilson had it.
So, and he ended up getting it going, and he was sideline to sideline, as he always is. So there's a couple things about the defense right now that still very much concern me. They're just so tiny and light. They're out there in nickel all the time because Christian Harris is in the Kyle Tucker zone. They get hit with 150 yards rushing, but they come up with these big plays in any given series where they're drive killers. You get a tackle for a loss. I mean, Fadakasi got that tackle for a loss that was as good as a sack.
That was huge.
6-yard tackle for a loss on a screen.
That was huge. The Bills were starting to get a little something going at that point, too.
Right. So, and then there's times where guys are wide open over the middle, and yet you look up and Josh Allen's got 130 yards passing on the day.
Yeah,
D'Amico's able to do a lot more things defensively this year because he's got guys who can play man, but it's it was really impressive.
They are now 11-3 in one-score games under D'Amico Ryans. They're 4-0 this season in one-score games under D'Amico Ryans. They have not lost a one-score game since the Jacksonville Matt Amendola boink off the crossbar game in week 12 of last year. So I know there's one school of thought like, these games don't have to be this close, and they don't. And people are right if they say that. I think the Texans feel that way, that these games don't have to be as close as they are. We make some self-inflicted mistakes, and we keep teams in the game. I'll go glass half full here. There is something to this team in these close games at the end of games, and there is a belief in one another that they have. It's nothing you can really measure with statistics or anything like that. All I know is I watch the way this team operates and the way this team kind of loves each other on the sidelines and everything else. And I watch other NFL games and highlights and press conferences and things like that. And there is something to this team, man. There is some sort of magic in the last couple minutes to this team.
One of the things that helps the magic, as opposed to like you just found an old spell book in the attic and you're trying incantations and stuff. The little fairy that comes in and makes it all actually work is Kyme Fairbairn. He floats in. Like Peter Pan,
wings,
and then he comes in and just and then boop, there you go.
Yeah,
and then he flies back off to heaven.
That helps.
He's he's so clutch. Who was doing the play-by-play on TV?
Ian Eagle.
It was Ian Eagle. Yeah. Ian Eagle invoked Clutch City.
I heard that. I loved it. I got chills.
It was. Yeah. I don't know. I was like, hey, hold off there, buddy. Don't go start invoking the Rockets championships until this team really, really has a signature win. But still, okay. I like the nod, Ian Eagle. I like the nod.
Yeah. No, I was cool with it.
Jamie's like he's just like in a movie about a burglary or something where he's kind of like the one, he's the one in the group of criminals. He's like the safe cracker or something.
Yeah.
Who's just almost
ice in his veins.
Super smart, calm, cool, and collected to the point where we're like, why is this guy a criminal? But then Kyme goes out and then he steals people's souls.
He was really, he was interesting. We had him on the postgame show and he was talking about how much studying he does of other sports criminals, you know, like Tom Brady and Tiger Woods and Kobe Bryant and guys.
Oh, yeah.
That, criminals that steal other people's souls, not that are actual criminals. It was really interesting just to hear him talk about his process.
I look forward to hearing that because I wasn't able to listen to it.
He was good. Yeah, okay. He was very good. We'll have a little of that a little later on in the show. So the Texans win yesterday, 23-20, huge win, 4-1 on the season. And if the Saints do everybody a little solid tonight and upset the Chiefs, you'll wake up on Tuesday with the Texans as the number one seed in the AFC, people. But as of right now, 2 seed in the AFC, 4-1 record. Hard to complain about that. And we will not today complain about that one tiny bit. So good job, Texans, yesterday. It wasn't all good. The Texans are now dealing with an injury. Sounds like it's going to be all okay here in the near term, but the second half sure looked a lot different than the first half yesterday, and this was a big reason why. We will talk about that coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
First down Texans to begin this possession at the Houston 33. Stroud fakes the toss. He has time in the pocket. He's going to gun it long. And Nico Collins is there at the 15, 10, 5. Rock and roll. Touchdown, H-Town. A bomb from Stroud to Collins.
Okay, that was fun. Harkening back to that Colts game of 18, 2023. And that was the first play of the game. This was same thing, not first play of the game, but a one-play drive. They come out on 1st and 10, play action. Nico's open by about 6 steps, and he waltzes into the end zone.
I was angry about the time of possession at that point. Come on, that's not how you win the box.
You got to possess the ball. You got to keep Josh Allen off the field. It was a great play. It put the Texans up 14-3. At that point in the game, I was thinking, okay, maybe this is the game where they put it all together. No penalties in the first half. That was good to see. But on that Nico Collins play, I didn't notice him kind of pulling up while he was scoring a touchdown, and afterwards he's dapping up all his teammates. Yeah. So the last thing I thought was Nico Collins is going to come over to the sideline and go into the blue tent. But he did. He was in there for a long time. Like an inordinately long time compared to usual. So long, the teammates started to go in. I don't know if you noticed this. Teammates started to go in and check on him.
No, I didn't notice that.
CJ went in and checked on him. Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs, they all went in and checked on him. I'm like, man, this is...
Like they were visiting an Arab dignitary or something in the tent in the desert.
Yeah, or a sick friend or whatever. It was so that was a little unnerving. Nico eventually comes out of the tent. He goes to the locker room. He's in street clothes for the second half of this game, and he's got a hamstring injury. Here was C.J. Stroud after the game, because it got, I don't think it's a coincidence, their offense was very gummed up after Nico was out of that game.
I noticed a difference, Sean.
I did too.
I noticed, like, everything fell apart.
You know what I
penalties
noticed?
Penalties in the third quarter.
You know what I noticed? They didn't score any touchdowns after Nico was out of the
game.
Seems
like, you know one thing I've noticed too? Ever since Joe Mixon left, they don't seem to be running the ball as
now
well
either.
Now
that you mention it, yeah, you're right about that.
Although, somebody pointed out yesterday, and I'm glad they did, because they hadn't been, when Joe Mixon was in and before he got hurt in week two, they weren't running the ball all that well.
No,
so. Anyway, but Nico, obviously a big difference.
A big difference.
Still ends up being the second leading receiver on the team yesterday with one or two receptions.
67-yard catch will help you with that. Here's C.J. Stroud. What do you lose when Nico goes out of the game?
Man, I think he's the best receiver in football, you know. So, you know, when he gets out the game, it definitely is tough on us. And a lot of things are, you know, predicated towards him and planned for him. And, you know, I definitely do think, like, we still have a lot of other guys to step up, too. So I thought they did a good job doing that. I thought Hutch played solid, you know. And really, I mean, you got to just find a way to win. We did that today. So definitely hope Nico's okay and just we can get him back as soon as possible. But I definitely know that we have a lot of depth in that room.
Okay, so just to get the report on Nico out of the way, and then we'll kind of break down what this all means. The reports I saw was Nico didn't talk to the media because when you're injured, you normally don't. He was in good spirits. I saw that. Aaron Wilson reports this 14 hours ago. Optimism with the Texans that wide receiver Nico Collins and offensive tackle Titus Howard's hamstring injuries are short-term and could be back as soon as next week against the Patriots, per league sources.
Oh, okay. Good. Well, he had this a couple weeks ago where it popped up on the injury report, and I hope this isn't a touch-and-go thing all year long, but it seems to have a little bit of a, you know what, this would be a nice year where if the bye week wasn't so late. Yeah, it would be nice to have a bye week midway through.
That's the exact thing I thought of when he went out with the injury. I'm like, man, this week 14 bye is gonna come back to haunt.
Dude, this is where I show up as not planning for the future. Because you asked me in the beginning of the season, what do you think about the late bye? And I'm like, balderdash, I say. Everybody, you should just want to play. You should hate the bye week because I'm tough.
I want it this week. I know.
That was the great thing about that play was, look, teams are going to play conservatively, try to take the top off the defense, offense, et cetera, et cetera. But every now and then they're going to screw up. And they had Cole Bishop in there in relief of Taylor Rapp, safety. And that safety got mesmerized with the crossing route underneath. You could see the cornerback turn into yell at the safety after Nico had gotten past the safety. When the opportunity is there, you take it. And credit the offensive line on that play, too. That particular play, I remember noticing that Blake Fisher had a really nice pass protection rep.
Snap,
like, yeah. I haven't watched all of his plays yet, but I would say on the sum total of it, it looked a lot more promising than last week. So you might have something there with Blake Fisher.
So this Nico thing.
Yeah.
What's your concern level?
Seven.
Nico thing. Yeah.
Seven. And I'm not looking past the. There's no chance in hell I'm looking past the Patriots going up to New England. Ever since Jacoby Brissett back in, what was it, 2014?
2016. It was the Brock Osweiler year.
2016.
Week
when,
three.
Like, oh, no, Jacoby
Thursday
Brissett.
Thursday night football.
Don't worry about him. And don't listen to anybody that says they can run, that he can run. They're just making assumptions. And then he ran all over the
Texans.
He
was a young man back then, though.
Yeah.
He's an old man now. Where you were going with that, I felt, was if Nico, I don't want to minimize the Patriots, but if Nico needs, you know, another week to let that hamstring heal.
Well, it's what I was worried about last week. Even though I don't think D'Amico and Casario operate this way, when Joe Mixon practiced on Friday and then didn't play, there was part of me that thought, like, I hope they're not thinking, like, we can beat the Jaguars with or without him. So I think they were just being cautious. Likewise with Nico, I think they'll... I think it'll be purely a medical decision based on, all right, no, he feels
fine.
Can he
go?
Yeah. But with a hamstring, once you have recurring stuff, that's where I start to feel like, all right, man, I want him to feel good for a whole week before he goes back out and does it again. But I don't know. We'll see.
I'm fine with them being cautious with Nico Collins, given the opponent coming up. Am I minimizing the Patriots? Perhaps.
Maybe. I actually hope he's sick. Like, I hope that he was dehydrated. Like, he had whatever that Alshire had and was dehydrated, and it was more cramp than it was a strained hammy or something like that. That's my hope.
That's
my hope for Nico, because I love him, is that he was deathly ill for a couple of
days. And the hamstring was the side effect.
We have no evidence of that, but that's my hope for him. If we can only be so lucky that he was really, really sick.
Yeah. A lot of people concerned about it, man. A few texts on here. What's the status on Nico? That's the status on
day-to-day.
Nico. That's what we know. He's day-to-day. He's day-to-day. I wonder if the Texans, I thought about this. I was reading Adam Schefter's article yesterday about the Davante Adams trade talks are expected to heat up this week once he gets over his hamstring injury that he has right now.
Supposed hamstring.
I'm going to put air quotes around it. Yeah,
this is one of those ones that mysteriously clears up when he gets traded. Yeah.
Could be a hamstring hold in.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah. But could the Texans yesterday have amped up the urgency for the Buffalo Bills to get in on the Davante Adams trade talks?
I think so. Khalil Shakir not being out there was a big deal, and it's not like Khalil Shakir is an awesome receiver. He's a nice receiver.
Think about what you just said. If Khalil Shakir not being on the field is a big deal for you, you might need Davante Adams.
Exactly. Yeah. That's where it just and yet at the same time, I think with the Bills right now, I was curious about this. I didn't want to lean into this too much before the Texans played them, but when a team starts out early in the season and they're playing kind of a different mode of football and the quarterback's spreading it around to a lot of nondescript guys, usually in the National Football League, usually that catches up to them and teams start to figure it out. And credit to D'Amico Ryans and the Texans defense in coverage, especially for understanding, hey, you can blanket these guys. You're going to give up a few things against the run yesterday, but I thought they were appropriately aggressive in coverage. And Allen was really out of a lot of options. And he also just wasn't, because he was on the run or because of whatever else. I mean, he had some opportunities. We're spoiled, I guess, with CJ. Some of the sideline toe tapper type stuff. Like, why are you throwing it away from where his hands are? Why are you not? Why is that not automatic? This feels like usually
we are spoiled.
If CJ misses a couple of those, and I think he had yesterday, I felt like he was a little off at times compared to his usual standards. It's a shock.
He was 28 of 38.
Right. That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Hey, like, there were times where, like, oh gosh, usually that's like kind of a, usually that's one of those throws that doesn't look humanly possible, and yet we don't bat an eyelash at it.
Yeah, yeah.
So to see Josh kind of flailing around like a big Wyoming hick out there, heaving the ball like it's a shot put or something, it was kind of a letdown.
I was happy for Stephon Diggs in that he had a good game, 6 catches, 82 yards, some big chain movers during the game. So it's a good game. It wasn't a middle finger game at the Bills, but Stephon Diggs was the leading receiver for the Houston Texans yesterday. Good enough. And they win the game, most importantly. I was happy for Stephon Diggs that he had a good game against the Bills, and the Bills had a game where the lack of a go-to wide receiver was so glaring.
Yeah.
It was so glaring. Guys that couldn't get open. Keon Coleman's getting hit in the back of the helmet with a pass where he looks like he's in block mode, and Josh Allen's throwing a slant route to him. That part for me, if I were Diggs, if I were super petty and I were Stephon Diggs, I don't know that I'd say it into a microphone, but as I'm driving home in my Cybertruck later on that night, I think he has a Cybertruck, I would be saying, they needed me today.
Yeah, this is
the Bills needed me
today.
You
know my favorite thing about Stephon Diggs? And this isn't, he does do this, he's very conscious of ball security when he's in traffic. He almost looks like
that.
You know, tight ends flat out say, look, I know I'm not that athletic compared to these other guys, there's no way in hell I'm fumbling this. So they usually just cross their arms around their chest, like, for extreme ball security.
Yeah.
Stephon Diggs looked very much yesterday like there was no way in hell he was going to fumble the ball against the Bills.
I noticed
and
that.
Have that be the thing, because he was covered up like he was going in over the goal line every time he had the ball.
Yep.
I thought that was really nice. Stephon Diggs yesterday averaged about 12 plus yards per reception.
It was 82 yards on 6 catches.
It was a little bit more It was a little bit more explosive than what he's been. He's been below 10 yards per reception so far this season, and it's a lot of possession type stuff. In terms of people expecting there to be drama or something, you know what it felt like? Because they had they sent the Bills reporter here for the entire week basically to ask anybody, like, hey, is Stephon Diggs causing problems around here? He felt like a special investigator, where you're like, all right, they're going to find something if you keep digging long enough.
Right.
You're going to find something. This is, I feel like now I'm a politician myself. but, yeah, and like and for the most part, nobody really, like, I don't think either fan base was really eager for it. Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs have said all the right things. He's on a one-year deal. It's a non-factor and a non-issue, I think. And part of it is that Stephon Diggs, he's in a different situation than he was in Buffalo. He can look across the field at Buffalo and say, oh, yeah, I'm like their only, especially with Khalil Shakir, I'm like the only guy that could do anything out there and create on his own. So, of course, my role is going to be different than what it was when I was younger in my career here in Houston, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. As opposed to last year where he's being relegated for, honestly, a bunch of slappies.
These guys.
Yeah, like those guys out there.
Those guys.
130 yards of receiving.
Minus Keon Coleman, those guys. Boy, I'm watching the screen up in our... They're going through all the NFL games, and they just showed the last minute of the Texans game. That decision by Sean McDermott to let Josh Allen throw the ball three times.
Yeah.
All incomplete. By the way, Josh Allen, after he got his head bounced off the turf...
Oh, yeah.
0-for-5.
Yeah.
0-for-5. Now, granted... On the other 25 attempts he had during the day, he was 9-for-25.
Right, yeah, I don't think... I was wondering about that when people looked at it, and I know some people are trying to make a controversy about him going back in. It's not like they bypassed the process or anything like that. I was curious. I thought maybe people watching would think, like, oh, he was concussed and not realize it. No. He was just as bad before he was concussed. And on that last series, there was pressure. I mean, they were really... They were humming there, and it was deep in their own. He was standing there in the end zone. I mean, it would have been a safety.
You have
to
get rid of it. Yeah. Like a safety wins the game there.
Yeah.
So you got to get it out. And I watched McDermott's press conference last night, Seth, when I got home.
Yeah.
He came into the press conference, and before he could even entertain questions, immediately apologized for the clock management at the end of the game.
Oh, wow.
He knew they messed
the
up.
The Texans have three timeouts in that moment and obviously plenty of time with which to work it. And to not run at all on any of those three downs when the score is tied, yeah, that was an odd. I mean, that was...
At least run it on first down and see if you pop
something. Right. No, and see what the Texans at that point, too, you know, you can almost make the decision whether to just let the clock run out. Yeah. You're in a bad spot, and you're playing a team that has Kyahmi Fairbairn as their kicker.
Yep.
That kick would have been good from like 65 yards yesterday. It was scary as hell. It might have curved in and out of the actual actual zone.
It knuckled.
Yeah,
he talked about that. He's like, no, it had some tail on it. In the post game show, he talked about that. It had some. Some maneuvering on that football, but all's well that ends well. Goes through the uprights, and the Texans are victorious, 23-20 over the Buffalo Bills yesterday. It is a victorious reaction Monday. Let's get into headlines.
Oh yeah,
we will relive the magic of Kyahmi Fairbairn and his right foot in headlines. We'll get into some of the headlines in the NFL. I now have a team that I'm rooting for in the Major League Baseball playoffs as well, based on something that happened yesterday. So we'll get to that and a whole lot more. It's a reaction Monday here on Sports Radio 610.
And Pendergast with today's headlines.
59-yard attempt for the win. Weeks with the snap. Tommy Townsend with the hold. And Kyahmi Fairbairn with a chance to give the Texans the victory. Here's the snap by Weeks. The spot. Here's the kick by Fairbairn. Has the distance. And it's good! Fairbairn wins it at the buzzer! The Texans beat the Bills! 59 yards for the dub on H-Town Day, 23-20.
Mark Vandermeer on the call. We will, at the top of the hour, go back through some of the twists and turns in this game through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. We've got some of the highlights, so we'll do that at the top of the hour. But here's what you need to know today. The Texans win 23-20 on a last-second field goal by Kyahmi Fairbairn, who became the all-time leading scorer in Texans history yesterday with his second field goal of the game. The field goal that made it 20-3 at the beginning of the second half. The Texans allow the Bills back in this game. Ultimately, it's tied 20-20. And in a way similar to last week's game against the Jags, the defense really, really helped out the offense. The defense gave the offense opportunities. Eventually, they cashed in on the one that they needed to at the very end of the game and overcame what was, I mean, I don't think it's a reach to say the worst quarter of C.J. Stroud's Texans career so far in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Two turnovers and basically three turnovers because he had the interception, which was his fault.
Mm-hmm.
He had the ball strip sacked and there was clutter in the pocket all day, but C.J.'s got to hold on to the ball down there, especially that where they were, the deep in their own territory. He handed a field goal to the Bills, but the defense came up big, keeping the Bills out of the end zone there. And then the really one of the only bad things that can happen when you're throwing the ball on third down on the fringe of Kaimi range, unintentional grounding penalty that gives you that is a minus 10-yard play and you lose a down.
Yeah.
So now you're punting instead of kicking a field goal. But that's what that you know. Look, good teams, the defense and the special teams pick up the offense, and that's what the Texans did yesterday.
Look, passing in that situation was frustrating. The fact that he was in that situation of passing, and you can't absolve CJ of the mistake.
Too cute,
and yet it was also with pressure in his face. He was trying making the right decision to throw it either throw it away or at least maybe make it a really hard catch. He's really good at throwing the and I you know afterwards. He disagreed with it. You could tell he was trying not to get fined. He disagreed with whether or not it should have been
the referee's call.
He was being very careful in how he disagreed with it. The referee's call.
Yeah.
But I think that we've seen him before when under duress. He does a good job of throwing it, and maybe Dalton Schultz makes an incredible play on the ball or something. I think that was his intent, but it just sailed on him more than it would have. So, to come back from that, you think back to... What was the NFC Championship game when Tom Brady threw three interceptions in like 1.5 minutes?
I think it was.
In Tampa.
It was a playoff game.
And then they came back and won. Yeah, these are the signature moments that really good quarterbacks do. They're going to have times where they have stinkers of a quarter or a stretch, and then can you just come back and act like nothing ever happened at all?
Yeah, if you're asking me concerns coming out of this game, and look, it's a win, so concerns get pushed to the back of the line here. C.J. Stroud is not a concern coming out of this game to me. A bad quarter. He's still a great quarterback. My biggest concern coming out of this game and throughout the afternoon was Nico Collins' hamstring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even with the Texans never trailed in this game, so there was never a point where I was worried about, oh, they got to come back in this game. There were certainly junctures in this game where I thought, okay, Josh Allen's going to get it going here at some point. He's an MVP candidate. He never did. He was 9-for-30 for 131 yards. Texans defense did a tremendous job on Josh Allen. The Nico Collins hamstring was my biggest worry throughout the afternoon because the offense looked so different without Nico Collins out there.
Yeah, and that's a long-term worry, too, when you start to see, okay, Nico, like all the things we're saying about the offense, about like, okay, there's reasons why they can't quite get going, and it does feel weird. Honestly, just think of the irony of it that we'll sit here, and I believe it. Teams are doing everything they can to take away the deep ball. It's limiting what the Texans can do. They should be able to run better than they have because of it. They should have developed, like, honestly, some of their quick passing game. I don't know why they can't get it going. And yet, they also do have Nico Collins leading the league in receiving.
Still
in a game where he didn't even play the second half.
Yeah.
So there's more to it than just that. But yeah, I mean, he's just been such a horse.
He has. The report on Nico Collins, courtesy of Aaron Wilson. Optimism that Nico Collins and offensive tackle Titus Howard, that their hamstring injuries are short-term and they could be back as soon as the Patriots game coming up this weekend, per league sources. What do you think about Blake Fisher yesterday? First start?
I haven't been able to watch. I don't like talking about offensive linemen until you can actually watch all their individual snaps, but I did notice him multiple times, including on one of the plays we just discussed, but it blanks on me, where he had... it was on the Nico Collins touchdown. Blake Fisher had a really good job versus Epinosa there. He did, so he had some nice snaps. I noticed more really nice snaps out of him than I noticed glaring issues. When last week when he went in, it was glaring
That
was right away. If we ever had any illusions and we got frustrated with Laramie about his his false starts or anything, like that was a reminder. Okay, yeah, but Laramie is still a very good football player.
But
this week it was much different.
It was much, and so was Laramie too. We should point that out. He's not going to get acknowledged for it at 7:20. I'm not going to acknowledge somebody for not getting penalties,
right?
For not being the most penalized player in the league for a week, but. It does go to show you, like, it goes to show, yesterday's game was, I thought, a fantastic illustration of the correlation between the penalties with the Texans and the performance of the team. They played a completely clean first half.
Yep.
And they were up 17-3 at the half, and they dominated. The third quarter, they commit 6 penalties, and that was the quarter the Bills were able to get back. The Bills scored 14, they scored their 2 touchdowns in that in that quarter. And then the Texans are able to kind of hem down the penalties. The only penalty in the fourth quarter, I believe, was CJ's intentional grounding penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to kind of bring the ship into the shore. So, but it was the first half of this game was really fun to watch because you're like, man, this we're really getting a taste of what the potential for this team is because that's a good team on the other side over there.
Yeah.
That's a good football
team.
The defense, and you dominated
especially,
them
the defense makes
half.
Life difficult. They really do. Now, They've got weaknesses versus the run. That's what's frustrating. When Cam Akers did some nice things running the ball, but the Texans averaged 3.4 yards per carry. Not good at all.
No,
a team like the Ravens can expose that weakness to an extreme degree.
Yeah.
The Texans can't do that right now. I mean, that I still do feel after that game that if we're playing the old, if we're doing the college football committee here and looking at common opponents and everything, the Texans still have to prove to me that they're in the Ravens' weight class. But they did go versus a very good defense without Nico Collins for the entire second half and did some good things.
We'll hit the NFL bullet point wise in the 7 o'clock hour with the big games yesterday. The games you need to know about for purposes of the Texans. The big one is the Jags are now 1-4, not 0-4 anymore. They beat the Colts yesterday 37-34, and so the Texans now have a full 2-game lead. Not to mention the tiebreaker over the Colts head to head. In the AFC South, Deshaun Watson was terrible again yesterday. I can only imagine what they're saying in Cleveland about the fact that Joe Flacco threw for 359 yards in a loss yesterday. I mean, Joe Flacco was tremendous for them. They didn't lose that game, the Colts, because of Joe Flacco. He put up 34 points and was outstanding yesterday.
Oh, Flacco. Mo Flacco, my old friend. Oh, would that I see Joe Flacco out there playing versus the Texans.
Yeah, I mean, they may see him in a few weeks.
If you look around the standings, too, you say, okay, the Texans are 3-1.
Four and one.
Yeah. The teams right now that are undefeated, the Chiefs at 4-0, the Vikings. I think the Chiefs aren't the same, but like we've seen this before.
They win.
Their defense is really good. They'll figure some things out offensively. Yeah. The Commanders, I have no idea what to make of for real.
They're fun.
I know. They're fun.
They're fun
as hell right now.
Yeah.
So that's impressive. And I guess the Ravens got off to a super slow start. But you got to remember that around the league, there's very few world beaters right now.
Yeah.
And the Texans are still very young. It's weird. They're old. They got a lot of old guys on the roster, but a lot of their key players are still very young. And I'm frustrated in some ways, but I also see the potential if they just keep making these improvements from week to week.
Last one here in headlines, baseball, just real quick. The Yankees and Guardians are both up 1-0 in their series. They resume their series today. In the National League, both series are tied at 1. I am a Padres fan now for the playoffs. I'm a Padres fan because Dodger fans, criminals that they are, were throwing things at Padre players. Fernando Tatis came out to right field the inning after they got all the chicanery calmed down and was kind of thrusting his hips at Dodger fans.
Yeah.
Manny Machado is yelling at Jack Flaherty in the Dodger dugout. I hate the Dodgers to begin with, and I think their fans are a bunch of crybabies who can't turn the page.
Probably the most
Padres.
Are the Dodgers fans the most classless fan base in all of sports?
They're up there. Yeah, they're in the conversation.
I would include any kind of like far-flung soccer leagues where officials get murdered
No, across the
globe. I think
they're
worse than any of them.
They're bad.
They're globally an atrocious fan
base. They're bad. So
they actively wish physical harm upon other baseball players. They teach their children to do that.
And then they inflict it on the fans of those other teams.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, they're horrible.
They're so stabby.
Go Padres. Go Padres. All right. D'Amico Ryans to his team in the locker room. We will hear the locker room speech, and we will relive key plays from the game through the voice of Vandy. Mark Vandermeer will take us on the journey here through what was a fantastic soap opera yesterday out at NRG Stadium. 23-20, the Texans beat the Bills yesterday on a last-second field goal from Kaimi Fairbairn.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. This is what the victorious locker room sounded like yesterday. Here was D'Amico Ryans. The voice you're going to hear at the end of this is Stephon Diggs breaking the team down at the end of this locker room speech. Here is D'Amico Ryans with his team following a scintillating 23-20 win over the Buffalo Bills.
Hey, congratulations, man. Awesome win. Hey, man, we talked about it, man, playing complimentary football. Everybody relying on each other. each phase, special teams, defense, offense, when we needed it most. Defense, you get a stop. Rob, you get the return. And then with the 59 yards. Walk off. Where's Emi? Here we go. Hey, Texans all-time leading scorer. Awesome job. Hey, we talked about getting better. We got better this week, all right? We stepped up and made plays when we needed to make plays. Everybody executed. That's what it looked like, boys. Hey, let's keep going. Let's keep getting better. Let's keep grinding. Let's go, baby.
Hey, y'all know how much that meant to me. I appreciate y'all. I love y'all. But the biggest thing, we got to get back to work, man. Yes, that was a hell of a win, but we got to get back to the grind on the next week, man. Love y'all boys, man. Texas on three. 1, 2, 3. Texas.
There you go.
This is kicker records are always weird because that is really nice. And that's I feel it does a disservice, though, too, because I would like how many people on that team or listening know who he surpassed to be the if they didn't see it in the stat. To be
do you
the
know?
All-time
I don't
leading
know.
Scorer. Yeah, it was Chris Brown.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, Chris Brown, who I feel was underrated as a kicker.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, he got run out of Pittsburgh in the year that Heinz Field was basically a sand pit.
Yeah.
And they wanted to blame him, even though all the other... But anyway, Chris Brown was the leading scorer up until that point. So, I'm more... I like just the actual clutch moments that Kymie Fairbairn
oh, sure.
has had. And particularly in this year, where they've been so good in these one-score games. That without Kymie Fairbairn... This is...
They're 2-3.
Yeah, yes. Yeah,
right?
Very easily 2-3
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, like, I think, like, that's... Yeah,
I mean, go back to, yeah, various game. Well, the Minnesota game, it didn't matter, but when they knocked him out of field... when they knocked him from a 54-yarder to a 59-yarder...
And he made it.
And he hits it. Like, yeah. These kinds of mistakes you get away with when you... And you can play conservatively... you know, at midfield when you know that Kymie can boom it in.
Maybe even 1-4. I'm just saying 2-3 because they probably find a way to win one of those games.
Yeah.
But he, there's, put it this way, no chance they're 4-1 without Kymie Fairbairn.
Right, right.
No chance. He is, you could make an argument. I know it's tough to, it's apples and oranges when you're comparing a kicker to a guy that's out there 70 snaps taking a pounding every week.
Yeah.
But you can make an argument that Kymie Fairbairn's the most valuable player this year.
There's, it's, well, especially with Nico. The two guys where you say, oh, wow, they'd really be in rough shape without those two guys, as other than the quarterback, I think that...
I'm not saying he's the MVP. I'm just saying he's in the conversation.
No, definitely, definitely. Yeah. The way these things have played out. No, that would be an interesting dynamic. If this Texans, please don't do this, but if they went through the season and they've got, like, 14 wins and they're all one-score wins...
I'm not going to make it.
Then, Kymie Fairbairn, MVP of the league.
I'm not going to make it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to... I need a nice 2 or 3 touchdown
win. Can I get a drubbing?
Yeah.
Can you look? What are the Texans favored by right now? Touchdown.
Seven.
They're favored by 7 over New England. Yeah. I'm not taking New England or Jacoby Brissett or anybody lightly whatsoever.
No.
Not one bit. But it is also an opportunity to actually just go in and take care of business.
Right.
Like it stacks up well enough that if you guys play clean football. And especially if Nico Collins is healthy, then you really should be able to have a nice, boring fourth quarter convincing victory. Please, let's do this.
Yep, agreed. All right, let's...
For the good of Houston.
Yeah, no kidding.
They just lost their baseball team.
For the health of Houston, please.
Do you even care? Do you care about them losing their baseball team? What?
I mean, they got knocked out of the playoffs.
It feels like a loss, Sean.
Dude, it feels weird.
I mean, it feels like a death. I don't know what I'm supposed to do with myself with all this extra time.
That's not an exaggeration.
Yeah.
Like, there's baseball on TV today, and I have zero desire to watch it.
Randy's going to be nicer to me.
That's good. Well, that's a positive.
It's dicey now with this potential broken rib that I have. She has to press a thumb into my ribs. Yeah.
Especially when you're basically telling her that's all she needs to do right now, and she listens.
I had to wait for my black eye to clear up before we went back, because I didn't want people thinking that Brandy was beating me.
I had more people texting me over the last few days asking if you're okay.
Yeah, I'm fine.
There were a lot of people checking on you. You got a lot of people in your corner, man, that care deeply about you.
It's been... And yet, with the bludgeoning that I took physically over the course of 8 days last week...
Yeah.
In the week before. Yesterday was harder. Emotionally.
The
game was harder. I got to sit in the stands for the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
My young nephew, remember the one that Bill O'Brien gave diabetes?
Yeah, when he traded Hopkins.
The day of the Hopkins
trade. Traded Hopkins, kid gets diagnosed with diabetes the same day.
Yeah, he went into a diabetic coma.
Yep.
Or shock, diabetic shock.
Yeah,
because of
nothing,
Bill O'Brien.
Yep.
He was there.
He was
there, yeah. Very special. He's fine. He's
not, any PTSD from walking in the building or anything?
No. But I was, so we were there in the third quarter. It was loud, man. From the press box, you can't tell necessarily, and I was curious about, with all the Bills fans, what it was going to be like.
Yeah.
It was loud.
That's what
loud.
I heard. I heard it. Yeah. And my wife was there. She's a season ticket holder. She said it was so loud. It was fun. All right, let's relive some of the fun moments and not-so-fun moments, kind of the twists and turns of this game. Texans got up in this game. The Bills scored first, 3-0. It was the only time the Texans would trail because Cam Akers. Now, this is how it's drawn up right here.
Stroud digs in. Stover in motion to the left. Hand off Akers over the left side, 10, to the outside, 5, to the end zone, Cam Akers, touchdown, Houston. 15-yard run by Cam Akers as the Texans take the lead on the Bills.
Basically untouched, he's patient, he waits. Cade Stover, you heard Vandy say it, Stover in motion to the left. Great seal-off block there on the edge. The left part of the line is flowing to the right. Stover's handling the left, and Cam Akers just waltzes
there's,
right
there's a really nice counter where both Cade Stover and Dalton Schultz had to have nice blocks. And then also, they took advantage on that play of where, you know, these defenses are doing all these different things to try to confuse CJ. So they're rotating coverages. And they caught the Bills rotating their coverage at the snap, and it puts a lot of guys out of position. There were a few times yesterday where they did a really good job of taking that, the disguises of the defense, and making it work against them. The one Ogunbowale throw to the left sideline that went for like 15 or 20 yards, they did a really nice job of the linebacker that was responsible for Dare was up at the line showing blitz. We're going to get all funky on you, right? And Dare just jets out of the backfield, doesn't block, leaves the defensive end unblocked, and they hit him. So there were a few nice plays like that, both in the run and pass.
There were some CJ had some nice like safety valve plays where he had guys in his face, and he just, either whether it was to the left or the right, he just threw it knowing Dare or one of the tight ends was going
to
be there.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's hopefully going to start to click and show up with more rhythm, I think, and more consistency is just, all right, when defenses do this funky stuff, it does put them in a weak position, but you just got to be able to find it.
And
it's hard to
weaknesses.
Do against the well-executed defenses, but they did a better job of it yesterday.
This was a huge play in the game on both good and bad levels for the Texans.
First down Texans to begin this possession at the Houston 33. Stroud fakes the toss. He has time in the pocket. He's going to gun it long, and Nico Collins is there at the 15-10-5. Rock and roll! Touchdown, H-Town! A bomb from Stroud to Collins.
Okay, the good news, they went up 14-3 on that play. One play, 67-yard drive. Those are the best kind of drives. The bad news is Nico Collins pulled up lame with a hamstring injury. Now, it does not sound like this is a serious hamstring injury. I saw Aaron Wilson's report after I got done doing all my stuff last night with the podcast and everything. I wish I'd seen it before that, because my whole thing, Seth, was, all right, we got to keep an eye on whether or not they put Nico on IR this week.
Yeah.
You know, because that would be the big thing to keep an eye on, because if he goes on IR...
4-week IR.
It's a 4-week minimum, and honestly, if a hamstring injury is putting you on IR, then I almost feel like it's going to be more than 4 weeks. Yeah. Like, especially with a player like Nico. If there was any chance it would only be 3 or 4 weeks, they would just keep him active, and then... And anyways, I don't want to waste too much breath on this, because it sounds like he's skewing toward, he and Titus both with their hamstring injuries, they sound less severe than what I just illustrated.
The play with Nico, I'm watching right now, the point where CJ makes the decision to throw to Nico, and it was when the backup safety squares his hips back up towards the line of scrimmage, and Nico's already past the corner, and but the key thing there is does he have time to do it? And he had a nice clean pocket. Yeah. They left Blake Fisher alone on the right side, and he had a really nice rep in pass protection. And it was as clean a pocket as CJ had all day, and it was perfect. That was a really nice job on multiple accounts there.
Yep. So that put them up 14-3. Texans force a punt. They get the ball back, and they go on another drive. And they are in the middle of what ended up being an 11-play 65-yard drive that had eaten up 6 minutes and 45 seconds. The problem was the final play of this drive was this decision on 4th and 1.
Stroud gets behind the center, juice, Scruggs. Handoff, Dare, straight ahead. I don't think he's got it. They did not get the surge, and the Bills celebrate. Texans drive thwarted.
Okay, so that was set up. They were moving, man. They were humming. They got to the Buffalo 25-yard line, and then... on first and 10. Cam Akers gets a yard at second and 9. They run a end around with Tank. I'm getting kind of the stuff they run with Tank behind the line of scrimmage is not working for me right now.
Well, that's some of it pays dividends when he's not getting the ball though too. Just the threat of it.
That's fair.
I mean that's it.
It wasn't working for me on this drive because he got stopped behind the line of scrimmage. Yeah. Dare gets 13 yards of it back. I guess there was some conjecture over whether it was a good spot or not.
Yeah,
some
were watching on TV, so it should have challenged the spot, it. Maybe? I have issues with the play call, and I think really right now with this offense, I don't have as many issues with the play calling itself as others do, because it's a matter of just executing the play calls. When you're getting stuffed, Ogunbowale got stuffed for no gain or a loss 6 times in that game.
Yeah.
One of them was on this 4th-and-1. Did you play the play-by-play yet?
We just did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to dial it up.
No worries.
This is not the team. This is your team right now. At what point up to that point did you think, oh, yeah, Ogunbowale up the middle.
Right.
We're going to mash it in.
When all 22 guys are all within about a foot of the ball.
The box is like there's 11 in the box.
Yeah.
And I think what they thought, they did have the defense trying to adjust right before the snap. Maybe if they'd been quicker with it. I thought at first maybe if they'd been quicker with it, if the official had gotten out there faster and the whole operation was faster, they might have ambushed him. But the defensive tackles just beat the snot out of those guys on the inside.
Yeah,
Shaq Mason got driven back.
It was bad.
There was no, that's not who they are. That's where I'll question Bobby Slowik. Like, you don't just get to wish it into existence.
Right.
Like, you know, I think sometimes coaches feel like this is where we'll prove to ourselves that we're tough. Well, like, no. Prove you're tough by consistently winning physical battles in the run game, and that's not the offensive line that does it.
No, and this was yet another one of those times with the Texans where it feels like, man, they're on the cusp of really starting to turn this thing into a boat race.
Yeah.
I mean, they were humming offensively. They had the drive to get the first touchdown, the Cam Akers that we heard. They had the one-play drive with Nico getting the touchdown. No Nico on this drive, and yet they're still moving the ball down the field. They're eating up clock. They had the ball for over 6 minutes. And then you line up on this 4th-and-1, and it's just a big schmoz out there. So,
and I don't, you know, on that one too, I don't know what CJ's process was on that, and maybe you could have gotten him a false. I thought they were going to try to get a false start. I mean, offsides,
maybe.
Yeah, especially when you go up quick.
Yeah,
don't give them time to think about it. Don't let the linebackers remind guys to hold their water.
They're nervous.
Yeah.
Now the Texans would put more points on the board before the half, and it was set up by this return by Robert Woods.
Sam Martin unloads the punt. Robert Woods backtracking. Again, a deep punt at the 14. Woods to his left, 15, 20. Woods, 25, sideline, 30, 35, 40, 45, and pushed out of bounds. A great run back by Robert Woods with 30 seconds to go. The Texans can score. They have 2 timeouts to work with.
Yeah, that was a big return by Robert Woods. Had an interesting day yesterday. That was a huge return. There was less than a minute left in the half. It was 36 yards. It set the Texans up at their own 49-yard line. They would go on to get a field goal to go up 17-3. Then in the second half, Robert Woods decided to field a punt at the Texans' 2-yard line, which he basically downed a punt for the Bills.
That was that was an underrated dicey moment in the game when they were backed up.
Yeah.
It was 20-17.
Yeah.
I had predicted 20-19.
But I
was nervous then that I had made that prediction. I didn't want it like
that. Oh, like it would have been
a safety and have it be 20-19.
Yeah. This game played out exactly how you predicted it would. You didn't get the score exactly right. But this played out exactly how you predicted it would.
I took the under,
you said it would be a close game with a bunch of field goals and the Texans would win it at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that you were... early acknowledgement for Seth Payne, Ben, real
sweet.
Quick. Yeah, yeah.
Acknowledge me!
You were. I thought about that after the game. I'm like, man, Seth had the... You had the game script
a lot of
on.
It, and I was trying to hint at it, but I didn't want to be braggadocious and, in the face of the Bills coming in. I didn't know exactly how the Bills were going to be able to operate versus this Texans defense. It's not the Ravens defense or the Vikings defense, but without Khalil Shakir. And some of the stuff that the Bills had been doing versus bad teams, it doesn't age well over the course of the season with the guys that they have right there. So,
yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't have predicted that Josh Allen is going to go 9 for 30 for 130 yards.
Literally the worst completion percentage for a quarterback in 30 years in a game where they've thrown 30 or more passes.
So I guess I have to thank Nico Collins for getting injured, for preserving the under
keeping
on that.
Keeping it closer.
I'm glad they committed a bunch of penalties in the third
quarter.
So thank you. I appreciate you looking out for me.
All right, so Woods had an interesting day because he had that punt return to set up a field goal. He had a bad decision that we just talked about. He had a punt return before the final field goal that was a huge 13 yards. So I'm good with Robert Woods. Circling back to the fourth quarter now, though. So the Texans are up 17-3. They score coming out of the locker room to go up three scores, 20-3. And then the Bills get back in this game. A bunch of penalties by the Texans in the third quarter. And then C.J. Stroud in the fourth quarter, for whatever reason, had his worst quarter as an NFL quarterback, and it started with this.
Second and seven at the Buffalo 33-yard line. Stroud under center, one back, Darren. CJ takes the snap, fakes the handoff, looking, throws over the middle, it's intercepted. At the 20-yard line, as CJ threw it into the arms of Terrell Bernard, third year out of Baylor, and the drive stops.
And again, this was another drive where the Texans were moving the football. 10 plays, 55 yards, and they'd eaten up over 5 minutes of clock. And they're up at that point 20-17, and you're feeling like, okay, this is the game where they're not going to let this thing go to the last minute.
Yeah.
Go down and get a dagger touchdown and put these guys back down by 10.
CJ, after the game, credited Bernard on that. It looked like he was going to carry Schultz.
Yoki-doki.
And then he switched over and stayed in his zone. So CJ misread that a little bit. At first, I had thought that maybe he thought that Diggs was going to sit on that route, but it wasn't even. It was just a really good job by the linebacker there.
Yep.
So it was. CJ doesn't throw a bunch of interceptions. The guys get duped over the middle with things like that, and I don't worry about it. I don't think that all of a sudden it's CJ's going to become turnover.
No. And I'm not worried about CJ Stroud. It was a bad quarter, but I'm not worried about him. Texans defense comes up big. They force a punt. Five plays, 22 yards, they force a punt, so they get the ball back. And they get the ball back. That was the punt where Robert Woods caught it at the 2-yard line.
Yeah.
So now you're up 20-17, and you're starting first and 10 at your own 2. You get a first down, thanks to Dare Gumbawale, a run off left guard, and then a run up the middle. Two Dare Gumbawale runs get them at least out of the shadows of their own end zone. And then two crucial plays back-to-back. Dare drops a ball out in the flat that would have kept the clock moving and gotten a first down.
Underrated, atrocious moment.
That was a circle it moment because at that point you're working the clock as much as anything else.
Yeah.
And Dare dropping that pass stops the clock, and you're now second and 10. Instead of first and 10, probably at like your own 25 or 30 yard line, because he had room to run.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, he's catching the ball, he turned around, he had 10 yards to run. Now it's 4.5 minutes, clock is stopped at 2nd and 10, and then this happens.
2nd down and 10 from the Houston 14. Dell in motion to the right, joins two other receivers. Here's CJ looking right. CJ pocket collapsing. He loses the football, and it looks like the Bills might have it. CJ fumbled inside the 15, and the Bills recover. No way. Another turnover, and this time the Bills in the red zone automatically.
Yeah, that was tough.
CJ has done a really good job with his pocket movement this year. That's the smaller stuff, just the moving within the pocket, just sidestepping
really
pressure, all that.
Yeah.
I thought yesterday might have been some of the most impressive actual scrambling I've seen out of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
There were some times, and a couple of them ended up being incompletions. But the point where I was a little bit nervous on some of those when he was spinning out of trouble, that he was putting the ball in danger too much.
Yeah, he did.
And there, yeah, this was. Now, this. The fumble I would worry more about than the interception. The interception was a classic NFL quarterback, Hall of Famers make that mistake, whatever. I don't want him to get too loose with the football.
Yeah.
But I don't want his newfound athleticism to lull him into complacency.
Newfound
there.
Athleticism.
He's got a sneaky athleticism. Part of it is that he's big. Kind of like Mahomes is bigger than you think he is and bigger than you realize.
He's a big dude.
So he's strong enough to stay up and keep his eyes downfield while guys are falling off of him. But you just got to be careful with the football.
Defense holds the Bills to a field goal. So I would submit defense does their job there again.
Yeah.
The Texans get the ball back. They are forced to punt after CJ gets the intentional grounding penalty while they were in field goal range. Penalty drives them out of field goal range. Texans have to punt the ball. Tommy Townsend pins the Bills deep. Josh Allen throws three incomplete passes. Texans get the ball back thanks to a Robert Woods return to about the Buffalo 46-yard line. You still need a few more yards to get into field goal range.
First down at the 46-yard line of Buffalo. Stroud gets the snap. Stroud looking to his right. He's using a lot of time. Throws it over the middle. Down inside the 41-yard line. Timeout called. 2 seconds to go.
I have time to kick it right here.
Vandy.
That was nifty.
Yeah, Vandy's so good. He's using a lot of time. You can feel
it. It was. And no, and from our vantage point, we're on the far side of the field. Yeah. And you're seeing him run towards the sideline. And he had just dropped that pass earlier.
Dare, you're talking
about. Yeah, Dare.
Yeah.
And all I was thinking was like, don't do it, Dare. Don't run out of bounds. What are you doing? And
go down. You had three timeouts. Yeah, he did.
It was. I thought I was watching Yordan Alvarez out there. The slide is so magnificent. Yes.
I'm okay with Dare sliding.
So we got past the first down mark. It almost, remember, they spot it where you start the slide. So he had to be very careful to not start it until after he got past the first down.
Well, they weren't going. It was first and 10, and they just needed a few yards to get. You're saying get into field goal range.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I must have watched on the TV copy. They had the red line there.
And let's. This is a good transition into Acknowledge Me. So we have Dare setting up a 59-yard bomb for Kyahmi Fairbairn. We acknowledge Kyahmi Fairbairn today.
Acknowledge me.
Today, for the season and for his entire career, in which he's now the leading scorer. This happened yesterday.
59-yard attempt for the win. Weeks with the snap. Tommy Townsend with the hold. And Kyahmi Fairbairn with a chance to give the Texans the victory. Here's the snap by Weeks. The spot. Here's the kick by Fairbairn. Has the distance. And it's good! Fairbairn wins it at the buzzer! The Texans beat the Bills! 59 yards for the dub on H-Town Day, 23-20.
That was cool, man. Yeah, H-Town
Day.
Good
call, Andy.
Founders Day.
That was a lot of fun. I thought that, you know, and the Bills fans, for fans that show up in huge numbers, I think they're my most entertaining. They're not as obnoxious as they are when they're at home, but they're also super drunk, and they wear those Zubas. And they're
committed to the gimmick.
Dudes are, yeah, the gimmick. Yeah, they're committed to the gimmick. Yeah. They wear their shirtless the way they are in 0-degree weather. They were in hot weather. So I didn't actually mind their presence there yesterday.
Wasn't bad. Well, and it was.
Is it because I grew up there?
You grew up around them, around those people. But I thought the Texan fans did a great job when they needed to at the game.
It was super loud. Yeah, I never felt like it. It didn't feel like it has in recent years where there's a lot of opposing fans and then not enough home fans to counterbalance it.
When Andy Reid thanked the fans on a road game here at NRG Stadium. Like
son of a, he did?
Yeah, remember that in 2022 in the Lovey year.
That's it.
It's like the crowd was great today. I'm like,
I know everybody hates Andy Reid, but now I'm going to make it even worse.
I'm going to save Kyahmi's post-game comments just so we can get more acknowledgments in. We'll get Kyahmi in between now and the end of the show, but I want to acknowledge Azeez Al-Shaair.
Acknowledge me!
8 tackles, 1 TFL, 2 pass breakups, each of which could have been an interception. A couple of quarterback hits. He was in the ER, according to Aaron Wilson, on Saturday and lost 10 pounds. He was on the injured list.
Intentionally? Yeah, a treadmill?
No, he lost it in a way where Amy always hears stuff like that, and she's like, oh, I need to get sick.
You lose fluids in either one end or both. It's not fun. And then to go out and play football.
Right.
I'm glad that it's climate controlled. It's a lot harder to do that when it's 95 degrees out
and
sunny.
Miami or something like
I was
that.
Nervous, man, after he missed that first tackle in the first series. And it was an uncharacteristic miss by him.
Yeah.
I thought afterwards he looked just didn't quite look right.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it took, it shocked him into looking a lot like his normal self.
Yes.
The linebackers, the front seven in general versus the run, we need Christian Harris back. They're just too light. They're just playing nickel all the time, and they're too light.
They don't have enough bodies at that position.
But Azeez Al-Shaair and his ability, too, where when Josh Allen is going to flush, the ability of Azeez and others at times to track him down on the sideline and keep it to a 1 or 2 yard gain, that was big yesterday.
That was huge. That they had guys that could run with Josh Allen when Josh Allen was running laterally was massive in that game.
Who hit Josh Allen maybe kind of sort of out of bounds early on? Was it Mario Edwards?
I don't know. Early on, I'm thinking of the play where Josh Allen looked like he was trying to flip it back into the field of
play.
Yeah,
that one, yeah.
I don't remember who hit him.
Okay. That was in the third quarter, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in the third quarter.
That was in the first. That was when he called it a basketball. So that was in the first half, right?
I don't remember.
The official said he let go of the basketball, after he was already out of bounds.
Said that on the mic. Yeah.
Lopez did the quick research. The guy's the high school basketball
referee.
A lot
of them are. Gene Steratore is a basketball referee, too. A lot of those guys, they like being officious. You know what I mean?
They like bossing people around.
They like bossing people around. Yeah.
They were probably in the HOA.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
HOA Steratore. The Texans' pass defense yesterday.
Acknowledge.
I just want to rattle off a few numbers here. The Bills' wide receivers caught 4 of 18 targets. 4 of 18. That is the worst wide receiver completion percentage to wide receivers by the Bills since 2009. It's the worst in an NFL game since the Rams in Jared Goff's rookie year in Week 12 with a minimum of 15 targets to wide receivers. So the Texans did a great job bottling up what is probably one of the lesser wide receiver groups, but they did their job. Josh Allen goes 9 for 30, the worst completion percentage in 30 years in a game for a quarterback with at least 30 attempts. Let's credit the rush as well. The Josh Allen didn't get brought to the ground a lot, but he was running for his life all day. 16 dropbacks he was pressured on, and he was 1 for 14 for 24 yards on those dropbacks. And he was 0 for 5 after he bounced his head off of the turf late in the game.
So on a clean, I wasn't totally even really clean. A hit. He was just going down.
Dragged to the ground.
Yeah.
And when you're trying to throw it, you're vulnerable like that, you know? So good day. That's why I say pass defense. Not the secondary, not the rush, both of them.
Yeah, no, and I think there were some wide open guys underneath at times. But when you look at the sum total of it, the strategy worked.
Mm-hmm.
They just the Bills were able to scheme some stuff up over the middle. It helped too that there were some pretty bad drops. It's just not a good wide receiving core.
No.
But on the sum total of it, it was the pass rush, which only yielded one sack, but did make Josh Allen very uncomfortable and did force some bad throws. And then ultimately he took a bunch of hits.
Yeah.
He's
gonna die by week 10.
I'm greedy for a scarier pass rush, but they're doing better than the sack total would suggest.
Yeah.
Outside of the Bears game, they haven't really amassed a bunch of sacks.
Dylan Horton.
Acknowledge me.
I haven't seen the snap counts yet. I know Dylan Horton was on the field yesterday. I haven't seen how many snaps. Of course, Dylan Horton, second-year defensive end who's coming back from stage 4 cancer. It shocked me when he was activated this week.
Yeah, I didn't know he'd be on the active roster at all this week.
Yeah, let alone in week 5 against the Bills. I have not had a chance to go back and see how he did. I have not had a chance to look at the snap counts and see how many snaps he played. This is purely Dylan Horton getting acknowledged for being back on the field in less than a year.
Mm-hmm.
He was put on the illness list in December of last year. Just an absolutely remarkable story. So, Dylan Horton, we acknowledge you.
He took 15 snaps on defense.
Okay. I mean,
I didn't realize he played that much.
Yeah, wow. I mean, they're down a couple guys. Jerry Hughes on IR, Derek Barnett banged up. So, they needed Dylan Horton yesterday to get those 15 snaps in. A little college football. Vanderbilt football.
Acknowledge
Vandy.
This
is
sexy.
Yeah. Well, 40
to some Jay Cutler.
40 to 35. They beat the number one team in the country. This is just a couple of weeks after apparently Nick Saban said that in an interview, but maybe on McAfee or something like that. I've not seen it. I only heard people talking about it. That every place in the SEC is tough to play except for Vanderbilt.
Regular Lane Kiffin, this guy.
Yeah,
this kid trying to make a name for himself in media. Yeah,
I think he's got a future, but that was a bad take.
Yeah,
because Alabama goes into Vanderbilt, they lose 40-35. Ben, did you bleep the appropriate parts of this?
These Vanderbilt kids. Potty mouths.
Diego Pavia, I hope I'm pronouncing that right,
sure.
is the quarterback for Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
This is him on the field after the upset of Alabama talking to the ESPN sideline reporter.
Diego, you just beat the number one team in the country. What's going through your mind right now?
It's literally all God's timing, literally from the jump. God gave me a vision when I was a little kid. And he don't let that any promises. It's God's time. Like, I'm super thankful. Super thankful for guys like Eli Sowers. Man, that kid's incredible. The ref bar team. Look at this. Danny, we're f***ing turned.
So 5 seconds in, he's talking about God's vision, and then 15 seconds later, we're effing turn. And he cursed more. I just didn't get that.
Yeah, I don't. It would have been if it went straight from him giving his testimony to right into that. It would have been better. There was a little bit of a pause.
A little bit.
I want to play a character, a crass preacher.
Yeah.
Preacher that talks to the kids the way that they want to be heard.
You ain't going to the NFL, Diego. Lean into it, man. Yeah. Lean into it. Now, here was Kalen DeBoer, the Alabama coach. This was his speech, locker room speech to his team after the game.
When you were a baby in your crib, your father looked down at you. He had but one hope. Someday my son will grow to be a man. Well, look at you now. You just got your asses whipped by a bunch of damn nerds. Nerds!
That's a powerful speech, man.
It's rough, man. That's what happened.
It's a powerful speech.
They got beat up by a bunch of nerds.
Yeah, yeah.
Not even like Stanford nerds. Or, it's a Notre Dame nerds or something like that. Vanderbilt nerds. Actual nerds.
Yeah.
Like nerds that, they're in real, like they actually really do like become engineers and stuff.
They're
football players.
And they've been the punching bag of the SEC forever.
Yeah. That's rough, man.
Yeah.
Look for non-Saban head coaches, too.
College football is wild now. I think the NIL thing, everybody's worried it was going to make the great teams even greater. And in some degree, it probably has. But there were a ton of upsets this weekend. It was crazy.
There's more change in everything. I mean, it's already been like that in college football where your best players only stick around for a little while.
Yeah.
But now, it used to be because they'd enter the draft. Now it's because they're there for a year or two, and then they jump ship. And, man, it's hard to establish something.
All right, last acknowledgement. This is a personal one here. Amy, my wife, her coworker Sarah, one of the teachers that she teaches with.
We're acknowledging Sarah.
I found out this story this weekend. So, this is one of the coldest things I've ever heard, man. So Sarah she's dating this guy, or she was, and ends up breaking up with him. Things went sideways. I don't want to go into the details, but let's just say it was his fault.
Okay.
I side with Sarah on this. So there's a lot of things, in relationships, you get revenge on your mind, especially if you feel like you were wronged in some way. This was genius. I've never heard of anybody doing this before, and if maybe I'm planting the seed in the minds of people in relationships out there to do this, then so be it. This was one of the coldest things I've ever heard. After she broke up with her boyfriend, or right around that time, when she knew she was breaking up with him, she went into his phone. So as soon as Amy says that, I'm like, oh, what did she do? Did she go on his Twitter account and tweet things out, or did she, see what was in his pictures or texts or whatever? She went into his phone and revenge jacked his fantasy football team.
Just blew it all to pieces.
Blew it to pieces. Put in Deshaun Watson as his quarterback.
Oh my gosh.
Traded his good quarterback for two crappy quarterbacks. Mm. Took all the injured players and questionable players and put them in the lineup.
He had
a lineup of all injured and questionable guys.
And he was all set for the week already.
He wasn't even going to check it. And needless to say, cost him money. It may cost him money down the road. That's really good.
It's relatively harmless in the grand scheme of things. She didn't boil his kid's rabbit or anything
and
like that.
And yet, I bet it angered him more than several other more damaging things would have. You know what I mean?
Just as
someone who plays fantasy football, that would stick with me.
I had women like this, doing the relatively harmless but still the revenge thing. I had a friend in college who definitely had it coming to him when his girlfriend found out about the many things he'd done.
Yeah.
But she didn't slash his tires, but she let all the air out of his tires.
That's good. Then he doesn't have to buy.
Well, right. But when he had to get to, he actually ended up being late for a football workout because of it. Like, he goes out to his car to go drive to the field house, and they're all flat. Yeah.
Oh, man.
That was acceptable. That didn't seem psychotic or anything.
No. Slashing the tires is next level.
Yeah.
Because now you're talking about, $1,500 for four tires.
Yeah, that's when you sue her.
Yeah. But good job, Sarah.
Except you don't, because then you got to testify in court about why she was angry.
We need to repurpose this for tomorrow, because I bet there's some good stories out there of people, revenge stories.
That'd be like a good Wednesday or Thursday one.
We'll repurpose that later this week. I'll keep that in the notes. All right, that's acknowledge me. We acknowledge the great performances in football or in relationships from over the weekend. All right, up next, we'll hear from Kyme Fairbairn. What was the process like? Kyme had to get himself up for a kick he thought he was going to have to make, and all of a sudden he doesn't have to kick, and then he's got to kick again in 40 seconds. What was Kyme Fairbairn's process, and what happened around the NFL this weekend that matters to Houston Texan fans? That is next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
59-yard attempt for the win. Weeks with the snap, Tommy Townsend with the hold, and Kyme Fairbairn with a chance to give the Texans the victory. Here's the snap by Weeks, the spot. Here's the kick by Fairbairn. Has the distance, and it's good! Fairbairn wins it at the buzzer! The Texans beat the Bills! 59 yards for the dub on H-Town Day!
Great call.
23-20.
Great call. Acknowledge Mark Vandermeer for the call. Good call, Vandy. Great job on that and other calls throughout.
Acknowledge me!
Good job. Here's Kyme Fairbairn after the game. This was in the postgame. We asked him first question. You had to get kind of mentally ready to kick
right
the first time the Texans are in field goal range.
Right, right.
And CJ gets the penalty.
Before CJ screwed him.
CJ gets the
did
penalty
you phrase it that way?
For intentional grounding. I did. I wanted to be controversial. So now you're punting instead. They get the ball back, you know? And so I was really curious, like the mental process of going through the, you know, having to get yourself up emotionally. Now you get dialed back, staying ready. Here was Kyme Fairbairn kind of taking us through that whole thing.
The last minute is insane if you really think about it. Weirdly enough, we've talked about it in the preseason just with Tommy, especially because Tommy's been through some great, Tommy Townsend, the punter. He's been some wild games in Kansas City the past few years. And we were just talking about like always staying locked in. So, you know, we have that penalty that moves us back and then we punt and it's like, oh, okay, I guess we get ready for overtime.
Yeah.
And then they get three stops, and on the first one, I was like, okay, I better stay locked in. I went back to my net and kept warming up, kept staying. You know, I didn't really change my mindset, but getting the reps and just acting like I'm going to go back on the field. We got the punt return, and it was like, okay, we maybe need 3, 4, 5 yards. We get the 5, and then, you know, hit it through. So, yeah, I think just mentally staying locked in and ready for whatever comes my way, keeping that calm presence and ready for whatever happens.
All right, so that was Kyme Fairbairn. It's really weird, just to give you a peek behind the curtain. Seth and I are in studio, and Get Up is on right now, and they're running the whole sequence that Kyme was just describing.
Yeah,
almost in synchronicity with his 1 minute cut right there.
That's the way things cool. tend to line up for us in the universe.
That was,
I think,
cool.
That was
gonna be a good day.
Okay, one of the more unexpected storylines that I did not expect. That feels like it mirrors the Astros a little bit in a weird way. Yeah, you got to have that veteran leadership from punters who have been on championship squads. That Tommy Townsend comes in, and because he's been in a lot of these tight situations, the Chiefs have made a business of coming from behind in the playoffs.
He's our
and
Carlos Beltran.
Yes, he's exactly like Carlos Beltran, except for hopefully the sign stealing part.
Yes, yeah.
The electronic part at least.
Right. Thought that was cool, man. Kyme was a good interview after the game yesterday.
I was actually kind of surprised that that he had to consciously think about the process. I expected him to be like, no, I've kind of like always been able to just stay calm and not think too much about what situation it is. I don't know how any of them do it.
In these situations, I'll say this. You know, if the Texans keep winning, they're going to be in the postseason. If they get in the postseason, they're going to be in close games where they're going to need kicks. Or they're going to need to make a play defensively. And while these games are going to probably make it so that you're going to have a new co-host by December because I'm going to die from all the stress.
Very selfish of you.
They will be battle tested in these close games.
Yeah,
you know?
There is
something to that.
I get the, you know, there's part of it where I feel much better after this victory, even though there's things that they still need to work on and clean up and everything. And maybe it's just the name brand appeal of Josh Allen and the Bills that makes it feel better. But I do think some of the stuff, man, you just get tired of hearing, like, yeah, I like, you know, D'Amico's being asked, like, what does your team learn from this? Does it give him confidence? Yeah, but you can say that about every game that they've played so far. At some point, it just comes down to, all right, play better football more consistently.
Yeah, you know what else gives you confidence? Winning 28-10.
Yeah, that's also, yes.
Yeah. So around the league yesterday.
Like they've proven, they know and understand that it's possible to win close games.
Yeah.
Okay? They already knew that. They knew that last year. And, you know, you want a little bit more than just knowing that it's possible to win close games.
Yeah. Boy, but Vandy has got a slew of great end-of-game calls thanks to this team over the last year and a half. 14 one-score games in the regular season in the D'Amico Ryans era, and he's only coached 22 NFL games so far. Hmm. He's had 14 games go down to the last minute. It's wild. And they've won 7 of them in a row. Other games around the NFL yesterday that matter to the Texans, we'll rapid fire these real quick. Jacksonville beat the Colts yesterday, 37-34. No more winless teams in the NFL. Jacksonville, the last one to win a game. Colts are 2-3 now. So the Texans have, they're back to having a nice, comfortable two-game lead in the division again. So that's good. We like that. Next week's opponent, New England. They lost to a Miami team that's not very good without Tua Tagovailoa.
Tua didn't come back yesterday. Come back. There wasn't a surprise comeback that I missed in the headlines.
No. That's okay. Tua's music. Oh, my God. 15-10. Deshaun Watson, not a good day for him. That'll probably show up in the Pettycast tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that. You know what? I have to dig in, because I know that there was some misreporting about him walking off the field.
On fourth
they made
down.
They made it look like he was storming off the field
like
and quitting.
Quit.
When it was actually just, no, there was a substitution, miscommunication.
Yeah, 12 so, guys in the huddle.
Yeah. So that wasn't that big a deal, except that it was in the ongoing saga of Deshaun simply not being a good quarterback anymore. That was bad.
Stat that I feel might irritate Seth Payne a little bit. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Bo Nix, all above 500 in a combined 10-5 at this
Ooh,
point.
Ooh, give me some. Why would it annoy me?
Well, because you and I are not big Bo Nix fans, and he's not the main reason they're 3-2 right now.
Oh, yeah.
Daniels is the main reason that the Commanders are 4-1.
Bo Nix, though, he doesn't bother me personally. I just thought that it was annoying to me that there was all this fervor over him because of his preseason performance. And you go and watch the games, and you're like, no, this is the classic, okay, stuff you get away with in the preseason. Caleb Williams, there was a fervor over, and he was doing a lot of rookie stuff that he wasn't going to get away with, but he was also doing some pretty damn incredible stuff. Bo Nix, it was more like, okay, yeah, this is what happens when a good college quarterback plays against backups. So, I don't despise Bo Nix.
Okay. Well, 10-5, they're all 3-2 for the Bears, 3-2 for the Broncos, and 4-1 for the Commanders.
I despise Sean Payton.
You and I are both there. There you go. And Bo Nix is kind of guilt by association.
Yeah, and I didn't used to despise him until he turned into a little gossipy, PS artist with Colin Cowherd when it came to interviewing with the Texans.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
And then acting like the Broncos never wanted D'Amico and didn't prefer D'Amico.
They wanted D'Amico.
He was very cocky about that.
Rightfully so. Someone asked on the text page, are you going to acknowledge Laramie for not getting any penalties? No. Acknowledge me is for elite performance, not for just doing your job.
That's like acknowledging Antonio Cromartie for not knocking a girl up or something. You know, like what? Like, good job.
Exactly,
you kept
that.
It in your pants. Okay.
Way to go. All right. So we got a big day here at the station. Keep it tuned here all day long. One of the biggest wins in the D'Amico Ryans era for sure. And one of the best endings in NRG Stadium history yesterday. Texans 23, Bills 20. Seth, antibodies today.
Antibodies, and I'm going to give you some banana bread.
I know, that looks good.
Jason Bristol's wife made it for
me. Ooh, look at that. All right, some banana bread coming up.